Now, my next guest is a climate activist and a global icon, Greta Thunberg. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Greta, I sense you're not a person who likes to mess around, so let's get straight down to it, will we? The UN says current plans and targets will lead to a warming of 2.5 degrees this century, which will leads to catastrophic climate breakdown. Can we still save the planet, Greta?
Of course we can. I mean, there's no point where everything will be lost or where we are doomed, etc. Every fraction of a degree matters, and every ton of carbon dioxide will matter and will always matter. We will always fight to save as much as we possibly can save. But of course, we have to keep in mind that we will cross several tipping points if we pass these levels of warming, which will make many of these events irreversible. So that's why the time is really running out, and we must do everything we can immediately.
Okay, so could you maybe explain to me what tipping point or point of inflection are we maybe coming to know that we could avoid, and what would be the effects of it, and what would be the effects that we could avoid?
Some things that are usually talked about is, for example, melting of ice in Greenland, and also the doomsday glaciers in Western Antarctica and so on. And once they pass their tipping points, there might be no going back, and we might have lost many of them forever. As well as, for example, thawing of Arctic permafrost, which is the feedback loops, which also releases enormous amounts of methane, which is a very potent greenhouse gas, etc. So these things that we're dealing with are very, very complicated, and we do not know exactly what will happen. We do not know where these tipping points are exactly, but we know that we are approaching some of them very, very quickly.
Okay. How hopeful are you?
It depends. I would say that I am neither pessimistic nor optimistic. I would say that I am realistic. If we do the changes that we need, if we achieve the enormous emission cuts that we need in order to stabilize the level of warming to as low as we possibly can. If we do that, then there is hope. But if we continue as we do today, then there is not much hope left. I think the hope today lies in the fact that people can change. It lies in the fact that we can change social norms and what we consider to be politically possible.
Okay, but look, I suppose a starting point for that is for people to accept the situation. And it feels a bit like we talk a lot about the environment now, or we think we do, but are we still kind of in denial about the reality of what we're facing here, do you think?
I would say definitely. It's like many people know that something's wrong. We might just not know what that something is exactly. We seem to know that the planet is warming because of increased anthropogenic greenhouse gas emissions, but we don't really seem to know exactly what that means or what are the full consequences of these, and we don't know what to do about it. So when we discuss the climate crisis, it is treated as a side topic, as a political issue among many other important political issues, etc., and not as the existential emergency it actually is. So in that sense, we are still in a state of denial.
So it's kind of a weird irrationality, isn't it? Because like even I was reading your book, the climate book, which you have collated lots of experts in there and everything. And you finish reading that book and you go, OK, we need to change everything. But equally, a lot of us seem to be capable of kind of largely ignoring it. Is it too big for people? Is it too complicated for people?
I think it is definitely not too complicated for us to understand, because even many children get it and get the fact that we need to change. So I would say rather it is the fact that we are social animals and we do as the people around us are doing. If no one is behaving as if we are in an emergency, then we won't really understand that we are in one. And it's seen as, when we talk about the climate crisis, it is communicated as a distant problem in the future, rather than a crisis that is actually taking place right now as we speak. Countless of people are risk losing their lives and livelihoods due to this crisis, due to the consequences of this crisis, and that's something that we tend to forget.
I know you also think that the phrase climate change is maybe not the best phrase to be using here, that it's a bit benign.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Change sounds like something that could be positive, especially yes. In this world where we are so restless, we want change all the time. And climate is like it's so far away, it's so distant, we can't identify with it. So climate change doesn't have to be that bad, actually, when you just look at how it sounds. So I use rather climate crisis or climate breakdown, because that is what is actually happening. The planet is destabilizing, and the delicately balanced natural systems that we take for granted are breaking down.
Yeah, you know, the strange thing, you use the word crisis there. I don't know what it's like in Sweden, but in Ireland, we have fallen into this thing now where everything, a lot of the day-to-day news, everything is presented as a crisis.
Yeah.
And it does mean that we tend to act immediately and reactively on a lot of things. But then somehow there's this crisis that really kind of seems to overshadow all of them that isn't treated as an immediate crisis.
Yeah, exactly. We seem to look at everything as a crisis now, apart from the things that actually are crises.
Yes.
I mean, of course, there are more immediate problems that, of course, deserve our full attention as well. But we need to be able to treat several things as a crisis at the same time. We need to be able to have more than one thing in our minds at the same time.
Have you seen the movie Don't Look Up?
Yes, I have.
It does kind of sum it up very well in a way, doesn't it? That everybody knows, yet nothing gets done.
Yeah, it's very typical for our time that we sense that something's wrong, but no one is reacting, and we are just treating this as a curious topic on the side when it's actually something that is threatening our long-term survival and civilization as we know it.
Listen, just speaking of Don't Look Up, if we just diverge for a second, you know, someone like Leonardo DiCaprio, who you would think has done so much for the environmental cause and in terms of raising awareness and getting people to pay attention, but then basically gets dismissed, on the other hand, as a hypocrite because he flies around in a private jet or whatever to climate conferences. Where do you stand on that?
I definitely understand that. It does seem weird that the ones who say that we are facing an existential crisis the next second hop onto an airplane, living as if there was no tomorrow. And of course, that doesn't really resonate with their message. So, I mean, it's just quite confusing. And it doesn't signal that we are in a crisis.
Do you find that you're held to very high standards as well? Do you have to live almost a perfect life now?
No, far from it, of course. It's not possible to live sustainably within today's society just by, for example, participating in society, just by paying taxes. That money goes to fossil fuel subsidies and whatnot. So, of course not. But I do think that there's a line that I'm not speaking on behalf of anyone else, but for me, mm-hmm. I don't want to fly on airplanes when I also at the same time am aware of the climate crisis that we are facing, and I don't want to do things like that. But then again, I do it not as a consumer, but I do it as an activist to raise awareness.
Yeah, and you're conscious of the symbolism of the things you do. Yeah, yeah. And so on that, on what individuals can do in their own lives, like, I think a lot of people wonder, can people themselves in their lives actually make that much of a difference, say in terms of recycling or, I don't know, reusable coffee cups or changing to an electric car? Is that all really just distraction?
It depends. If we only focus on that, then I would say yes, it's a distraction. But if it's a part of a wider emergency state of mind, then it's not a distraction. Then it can be something that helps you concretely to focus on this. For example, I didn't stop flying, I didn't become vegan to lower my carbon footprint. I did it because I wanted to feel like I was doing at least something, and I did it to send a signal and a message to those around me that we are facing a crisis, and in a crisis you change your behavior. So of course we shouldn't be focusing only on individual actions, but we also need to realize that unless we have engaged individuals, we won't achieve the systematic changes that we need and that we should be focusing more on.
Yeah, very good. So people need to be living this in order to be kind of aware all the time.
They don't need to, but it's one good method to do it.
Yeah, okay. The book, the climate book, you've brought together a wide range of experts, but then you've written pieces at the beginning of each section of the book, I suppose. In one of your own pieces in the book, right, you say that we need to reduce our individual per capita emissions to around 1 tonne of carbon dioxide a year. And you point that out that, say, for example, in the US, the current figure is about 17.1 tonnes per person. So it strikes me, Greta, do you think we need to completely change how we live in order to save the Earth? Like, does consumerism and economies as we know it and our whole way of life have to change?
I mean, if we want to stay below the internationally agreed climate targets, then yes, overall, in general, we will have to make big changes. But then again, many people will not need to make that big of changes because it is a few people who are responsible for the majority of our CO2 emissions, the ones living way above our planetary boundaries. So I think rather than focusing on everyday people, what we need to do, we need to focus and call out those who are mostly responsible for this crisis. 10% of the richest 10% of the world population are responsible for 50% of our global emissions.
Okay, but like, in fairness, probably my country and your country and the West and US in general makes up a lot of that 10% too. Just before we get to the broader kind of the broader issue of politicians and industry and so on, I just wanted to ask you a little bit more about us as individuals. Like, could you paint a picture for me of what a sustainable life looks like in practicality? Like, do we need to give up flying? Do we need to all give up meat? Does agriculture have to change completely? Can you paint a picture for me?
That is not really up for me to say.
Okay.
Of course, it's not a secret that we need to change our behavior. Some things need to change more than others. Some sectors need to change more than others. But if I think that right now, when we are facing an existential crisis like we are, we should not be spending our time talking about specific details.
Okay.
Because the second we start treating this as a crisis, we will focus on all these details. But as it is now, when we are still in some kind of state of denial, only talking about these details kind of distracts from the broader holistic picture.
Okay, so on that broader picture, you say in the book, you say it gives me no pleasure whatsoever to keep calling out the bull of our so-called leaders. Do you have any faith in any politicians?
It depends. Of course, some people less than others. In general, of course, not every politician is the same. That's a wrong way of phrasing it. But in general, the elected officials are not taking their responsibility. And if I was in their position, I would use my platform to leave the table and say that this is not working and I'm not going to be a part of it. I'm not going to accept this. Because what we need right now is massive pressure from the outside, and we're not going to achieve that pressure only if we have politicians in office who pretend that they are doing enough.
Okay, so you don't think that the political system is working as such, and that the only pressure is going to come from people acting outside the political system and acting maybe in a kind of a guerrilla fashion?
I mean, it depends, of course, but as it is now, the political systems have not been working in our favour. We don't have any laws to keep us safe long term from the self-destructive greed that we experience every day. We don't have any laws to keep the carbon in the ground, etc., etc. So in that way, many things will have to change.
So do you have any faith in the COP process, in the targets we set, in net zero by 2050 targets, say, all of that?
As it is now, no, definitely not. Our current international climate frameworks have more or less been designed in a way which allows and even encourages countries to use loopholes like cheating and excluding emissions from these statistics and so on to make themselves look better. Because right now the universal norm is to blame someone else and sweep things under the carpet and postpone the problem for someone else to deal with later on.
Do you find politicians in general, are they dismissive of you when you meet them? Do they listen to you? Do they seem to be taking on board what you're saying?
It really depends, of course, from one individual to another. But we have been meeting with many politicians now for years, and they have been saying one thing and then been doing a completely different thing. So I think we can safely say that they have proven that they are not going to keep their promises, that they do not prioritize the climate in this way. So then it's up to us to hold them accountable.
Yeah, and look, you do come up against a certain amount of condescending older men as well. The famous incident being Donald Trump was very dismissive of you, but you did have your revenge, didn't you?
I mean, depends on how you see it. Yeah, I mean, he's gone now, so to speak. Yeah, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you sent him off with... He had tweeted about you. She seems like a very happy young girl, looking forward to a bright and wonderful future. So nice to see. And then when he was no longer president and he was heading off, you tweeted right back at him. He seems like a very happy old man, looking forward to a bright and wonderful future. So
yeah.
Nice to see. So yeah. Humour is a great way to cut through in the world as well, isn't it? It's funny, like one little tweet like that probably does a lot for the conversation too.
Yeah, it does. We need every way to reach out to people, and that's a powerful way of doing it. It's also very fun.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing is, people might think that you're kind of very serious and miserable about this all the time and worrying all the time about it. But clearly you're able to kind of be, as Donald Trump might say, a very happy young girl having fun as well.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you can't spend all your time worrying about this. I think if you're doing everything you can to turn things around, there's really no point in just worrying about how the future might turn out. You should rather be spending your time trying to change that future. So of course I can focus on other things too.
Yeah, because I do think a lot of kids and younger people now are tending to get a bit anxious about it all and the enormity of it, aren't they?
Yeah, of course. And I've been there too. It does feel like such an overwhelming crisis, something that is too big for us to deal with. And the best way, the most effective way of getting rid of that feeling is to take action yourself, because then you feel like you're doing something against it. You're stepping up and raising your voice, and that also brings you an important sense of meaning and purpose.
Yes, and a sense of at least some control maybe of it.
Yeah.
Do you remember when you first realised what was going on and the gravity of the situation? How old were you?
I think it was a gradual process. I was maybe around 10 years old or something like that.
And do you remember what the kind of the eureka dawning moment when you realised, hang on a minute, this is insane, this is happening, and why aren't we doing anything about it?
Yeah, I mean, I tried to look up as much information about it as I could. And we used to, I mean, sometimes we watched like documentaries in school of how the world was changing. And I just thought it was so horrible, seeing pictures and videos of animals dying and ecosystems disappearing. And I just couldn't understand how no one else was reacting the way I was.
Yeah. And you did get, as you said there yourself, you did get quite anxious and depressed about it initially, I think, didn't you?
Yeah, definitely.
And so was it a worry over the climate that you kind of stopped eating a bit and stopped speaking a bit? Was that because of that worry?
I mean, it was that kind of worrying led me to going into a depression, which... I mean, I stopped doing many things, and I just stopped working in a way, which is, I mean, it's more common than we think for children to experience that.
Is it? Yeah. And then, so what you did was, in a way, did you act out of it then? You decided, okay, so you started the school strikes for climate. This was a way of you reclaiming, you're starting working again, was it?
Yeah, definitely. I started doing some small things at home, like turning off the lights to save energy and so on. And then I started to talk to my parents about, and I started to express my concerns. And they, after a while, they started to listen to me. And then I did more things, like become vegan and stopped flying, etc. And that also gave me the courage and conviction I needed in order to start school striking. Because I tried many different methods, none of which really worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't fit well in this very sociable environment, being around many people at the same time, for example, in other movements and organizations. So then I started something myself instead, a school strike for climate alone.
Yeah, which was still, for a kind of a shy kid who didn't fit in, it must have been a difficult thing to do to go. Did you go on, you went on your own initially and just sat there?
Yeah, definitely. It was very much stepping out of my comfort zone. But then I thought to myself, well, this is an existential crisis. It's about survival for many people. So then the least I can do is to step out of my comfort zone and try to bring attention to this.
Yeah. And then when other people started coming up and asking you about it and joining you and everything else, were you getting freaked out at that point?
Yeah, I was. Especially in the beginning, because I was so like intimidated by other young people and children. So it was quite scary in the beginning. I think that was the thing that held me back. But then I sort of won over that and I kept going.
Yeah, and you mentioned that word purpose and meaning can be very powerful things, can't they, to kind of get over yourself, if you will, yeah.
Yeah.
Greta, is your autism and the fact that you are not, we'll say, a typical, neurotypical, is that central to the path you have chosen, do you think?
I definitely think so. I don't think that if I would have been like everyone else, if I would have been like everyone else, I might have just gone along with following the stream and just continuing my everyday life as if nothing was happening, getting caught up in this social game that everyone seems to be enjoying so much.
Yeah.
But now I couldn't do that because I couldn't say one thing and do another thing. I couldn't pretend to care while not doing everything in my power to make things better. Also, I don't really care as much about what people think about me. I don't care about being the person who addresses the elephant in the room, so to say. So that has definitely helped me, being able to have a message across, a very central, a very clear message, not sort of packaging it in a way which people will like, but rather just tell it like it is, not caring about people's reactions.
Yeah, I believe a lot of people in the climate movement are neurodiverse and atypical.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Can they tend to be more rational than the rest of us? Is that part of it?
I think that can definitely be a factor of it. But I think also as I talked about before, many neurodivergent people are not afraid of standing out, are not afraid of saying what's obvious and what everyone seems to be ignoring. Because we cannot really pretend in the same way, many of us. So I think that's definitely an important factor to it.
Mm. You say in the book, as a species, we were maybe too superior for our own good. What do you mean by that?
Because we have created this society we can get everything we want. We can get, many of us at least, we can get our food delivered to our door, and we have, and this has all happened so quickly that we haven't really been able to keep up. Our brains are still operating largely the same as they were hundreds of thousands of years ago. We are not really adapted for this society, which could be a reason why people are not feeling, why many are feeling so unwell.
Okay. And do you think we can change?
Definitely. We have seen that many times in history before, that change can happen very, very quickly, for good and bad, of course.
And the fundamental way people are, people's nature can change, can it?
Yes. I mean, just take the pandemic as an example. We change our behaviour and we change what we consider to be socially acceptable in no time. So that I see as a sign that we really can change. We can change our behaviour.
Yeah. But of course, the pandemic was a crisis that we could see literally right in front of our noses, couldn't we?
Yes, exactly. And we also have to remember that for many people around the world, this is also the case with the climate crisis. We have right now tens of millions suffering from acute hunger in the Horn of Africa, and tens of millions who have been displaced due to extreme floods in Pakistan. Just a very few recent examples. So for many people, this is the reality that they are dealing with.
Yeah. You, when it was reported recently about that kind of fairly shocking news about that we weren't going to hit the 1.5, we're going to hit the 2.5. You know what I remember most as being the footage that was shown for that? It was like kind of mega cities in Asia with palls of smog over them. That's the kind of imagery, isn't it? But like, I don't know if that's helpful in kind of ramming home how important it is.
I mean, at least it's better than only showing pictures of polar bears, because that is very, very distant to us. It's not something that we can identify with at all.
Yeah, yeah.
A polar bear. Most of us, at least.
Yeah, I can see now. That image is almost like a kind of a meme now. A polar bear, like, on a broken off piece of ice. Yeah.
That's how many people view the climate crisis.
Yeah. You have another very powerful image in the book. We are sawing off the branch we are living on.
Yeah.
Can you explain that to me?
Yeah. We are moving very, very quickly over a precipice. We are approaching a precipice. We are about to hit the wall. And all signs are showing this. Science is more or less screaming in the way that science can do that. And yet we are just continues to increase the speed. Because our system, our life supporting systems and our basic conditions that we are depending on are being uprooted, we are moving on deeper into uncharted territory. And these are things that we haven't really experienced before on a global scale. So these problems are unprecedented.
Yeah, and still I get this image of that. We keep at it, sawing and sawing away.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Listen, Greta, I won't take this personally, but do you blame my generation? Do you blame older people for how we've lived and how we've used the earth?
I don't blame everyone. There are some people belonging to that generation specifically that I blame. People who have been in positions of power during these decisive decades. Over one third of our global CO2 emissions have occurred since 2005. And there have been people who have been in powerful positions during all that time.
Who knew? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Those I blame.
Yeah. Still though, it must be frustrating for you, and you must kind of feel, I don't know, it's pretty bad that we left this to kids and young people to sort out, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very unfair.
Yeah.
Because we are not the ones who have created this crisis. We have just been handed this world where there was a climate crisis, and it seems like there are so few who uses their privilege and their opportunities to act, so that there is a very unproportionately big responsibility that falls on the shoulders of young people.
Listen, one thing I haven't asked you about is, I suppose, industry and energy and all that as well. So look, two kind of hopeful things that people would hold up is one, that there's the kind of greening of industry, that there's going to be a Green New Deal around how industry does things, and that consumers will drive industry towards being more green and everything. Do you believe in the Green Industrial Revolution? Do you think it'll help?
I mean, of course, it's not a secret that right now our systems are not designed to protect us long term, taking in consideration the climate crisis and the environmental crisis. What we need now is, I mean, science to quote the IPCC, we need rapid, far-reaching, unprecedented changes in all aspects of society. And that is not something that will happen only with companies investing in so-called green technology and green energy. Right now, the world is on track to produce twice as much fossil fuels than what would be consistent with the 1.5 degree target. And that is not something that can be solved within our current systems. But I also, of course, think that we need to do everything we can within this system while we try to change things that will put us on the right direction.
And do you think, is renewable energy going to help to save the planet?
Of course. Mm. I mean, there, when it comes to, for example, wind and solar power, the miracle has already happened. And if we do that in the right places on a global scale, then it will be a game changer.
I see that Sweden is talking about going back to nuclear power, your mm-hmm. own country. Do mm-hmm. you think, is nuclear part of the answer here? Do we need to learn to kind of get over the issues we might have around it and look at it again?
It depends. But we do not have the time within the time frame of the Paris Agreement to replace our current fossil fuel energy with new nuclear power plants. That is just not realistic, because we need to act now within the coming years. So we need to zoom out and look at this from a broader perspective.
Okay. Do you believe we will do this, Greta? Do you believe we'll save the planet?
I don't know. It's entirely possible and it's entirely up to us.
Yeah. If people are listening and they think there is a change I'd like to make now in my life, I presume the first thing you would say to them is read your book. But if people wanted to try and make the change in their own lives, what is useful for them to do?
I would say that the most effective way is to become an activist, get involved and reach out to people who share the same values as you. Because if you are a group of people, you will encourage each other and you will go much, much further than you would be able to go alone.
Okay. Greta, is this your whole life now?
More or less, yes.
Yeah. Are you kind of thinking, oh my God, what have I signed up for? Like, I can't get out of this now.
I mean, not really, actually, because I think that the positive things that I get from this, the sense of purpose and meaning, is much outweighs the negative effects of it.
Yeah. And in terms of the exposure, and I don't want to trivialise it by calling it fame, but in terms of your visibility around the world, which I presume is something that you never imagined was going to happen. I mean, a lot of better people than you have had their lives destroyed by kind of fame and everything. But is it difficult to handle, or do you think you're kind of, you've got it?
I mean, of course, it's very overwhelming to be in a position like that. But I try to not soak it in, so to speak. Yeah. I try to stay as grounded as I can, and just focus on the things that I want to do. Focus on the mission.
Yeah, and are you able to filter out, you know, if the people attacking you or criticizing you or whatever, are you able to kind of ignore that?
Yes, thankfully. I think I see it more as attempts to attack. I mean, these attempts to attack us should be seen as something positive also, because they wouldn't be spending their time doing this if we didn't have an impact. So these are signs that we are making a difference.
Okay. Listen, you're an extraordinary person, and it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And the climate book, created by Greta Thunberg and including all kinds of experts and thinkers from George Monbiot to Margaret Atwood, is out now. By the way, Greta, have you met Margaret Atwood?
Not physically, no. Which
okay.
is
Because you know what? I've only spoken to you once and I've only met Margaret Atwood once. But actually, I really think that you should make it your business for you and her to get together, because I actually think I just have a hunch that I think together you could be greater than the sum of your two parts. She's an extraordinary person too.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah. Okay. Greta, it's been a pleasure. Greta Thunberg, thank you very much.
email brendan@rte.ie.